This is the Andres Segovia Show.
Hey everyone, it's Andres. On today's episode, I have a very special guest. He is the CEO of Unplugged. If you heard of him, and you heard it from me, is because you saw me doing a video reacting to whatever their company was and the product that they're offering. And they were very generous enough to send me one of their first 500 devices. And I've already done an unboxing and first impressions on it, so I recommend you check that out. Now, I will be reviewing said device as well and possibly comparing it against other offerings that are available so you can make an informed decision. Now, you want to be sure to stay in the know, so subscribe so you don't miss out whenever that episode drops. But today, I get to sit down with the CEO of Unplugged, Ryan Patterson, to talk about the why this phone exists, because I do believe there's a market for it. Heck, I'm in tech all the time, so I know there's a space for this. The question is it right for you? Well, that question really starts with how much do you know about your device and what it's doing to you and getting from you. So while we didn't really get to talk about the phone much in this conversation, we get to talk about a lot of what they're doing. So here's my conversation with Ryan Patterson as to why this phone exists. Ryan Patterson, CEO of Unplugged. Thank you so much for being here on the Andres Segovia Show.
I'm very glad to be here. I'm really glad that we had the exchange we've had over the last couple of weeks. So,
yeah, it really helped break the ice and alleviate some of the concerns that I got, because I really appreciate you sending over the Unplugged phone. So for some people, this might be the actual first look at the production device here. This the production model you guys are working on, right?
It is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've got 10,000 phones being loaded on planes right now out of Indonesia, and they're heading to the United States. And so, yeah, you have in your hand one of the ones. We did a 500 phone run back in the fall. And so that's what you have in your hand right now. So the very first production run is coming to the United States, and I'll be heading to Las Vegas and receiving them here very shortly.
Oh, nice. Well, I'm happy to have it. And for folks that are eagle-eyed viewers, we'll see over to my right shoulder. I have the box there. And depending on when this is airing, you can already see the unboxing video. So for those watching on across the video platforms, look in the video description down below, and you'll be able to find a link to the unboxing video. For those of you listening on the podcast, this is more of a visual thing, so you might want to see the video thing on Rumble, YouTube, Odyssey, BitChute, so tune in through there. But we got a lot to talk about with respect to this phone, what it is, what it's not, why it is, and of course Unplugged. And we'll also talk about you because you and I have had conversations before, and even before we started recording, you've been at Unplugged already for 2 years. So what's this experience have been like for you? Because walk us through what was it like to develop this phone, because this looks to me, and you correct me if I'm wrong, this looks like it's in a design phone that it's an original equipment manufacturer, not some third-party thing you guys picked up.
And so not OEM, it's an OEM, an original designed manufacturing device, right? So we have designed the phone right from the ground up. Chipset, from the kill switch, the cameras, the microphones, all of that, right? We're not just buying an off-the-shelf phone. We've worked with a phone manufacturer. I've had plenty of my former colleagues say, why are you going to do hardware and software? Hardware's hard. Hardware is hard. 100% it's hard. But we had some very specific things that we wanted built into the phone, and we've worked with them, and we've got a great partner there. And yeah, these are not devices that are being brought off of somebody else's manufacturing line. These are very specifically done for us. The first 500 was the engineering presets. This next 10,000 is our first engineering run, and we're very excited to have them come on, and we have designed them, and my chief technology officer has designed them from the chip setup.
Yeah, and your CTO was supposed to be the guy behind Pegasus,
Iran Karpin. The guy behind Pegasus, he was one of the founders of the company that was then bought by somebody else, of which Pegasus became. Iran's work, his whole work for decades, was around how do you do remote administration of a fleet of mobile devices, right? So we've all been in places where we've worked with dozens of devices, hundreds of devices, thousands of devices, right? We've all worked with organizations where there is a organizational construct around how do you administer devices. and Iran was there, and he was working to build those kinds of things. And then as the company matured and people started to look at things, the sort of the more offensive nature of things that could be done with that came out, and he decided to leave and look at other pathways of how to understand how to work well and administer large scale mobile devices without it being an offensive platform. One of the things he has worked on has been the pacemaker community. So if you get a pacemaker put into your heart, that pacemaker comes to the surgical room with the actual device that shocks your heart to get it back in, and a cell phone that controls the pacemaker and records the data. And imagine the security around said pacemaker and phone needs to be pretty locked down. And that's why, yeah, you can't just like go and buy another phone to control your pacemaker. It's got to be tied to the device. And so look, Iran has spent his professional career trying to figure out how to have the most secure communications. And he met Eric a while back, and they formed a professional relationship, and they continue to kick around ideas for all kinds of solutions.
Yeah. And I think it is very important. I come from the BlackBerry world. So to me, that's always been something. I miss my BlackBerries. I have some of my trophies right here to my left. And these are not even the legacy devices.
The actual keyboard that you can feel your fingers.
Yeah. So there it is. This is right. The Porsche design one, because I had to get it. It's more like a trophy for me. And I'm glad you mentioned keyboard. For anybody listening that will not give up their iPhones, stay tuned. There is it's a long delayed video. I'm doing a review of Clicks by Michael Fisher and Crackberry Kevin that were behind a product to bring a physical keyboard to an iPhone. And I have tested it, and I'm quite impressed. And these guys are BlackBerry lovers too. But that's a story for another time. Back to the whole security thing. That was the whole thing about BlackBerry, is just how secure they were. I remember when BlackBerry was being sued by some Middle Eastern countries because their governments could not get into the devices. They particularly wanted to get into BlackBerry Messenger because there was some communications going on for XYZ reasons, and the government couldn't crack into it. And
they wanted access to the BlackBerry code. Messenger was SMS on BlackBerry. BlackBerry to BlackBerry, short message. That's what that was.
Yeah, right? it's encrypted end-to-end kind of thing. Yeah, right?
For sure.
The identifier, there was a PIN until they made it more commercial, and then they started requiring people to have an account and approach it that way. But enterprise technically still exists. The consumer side does not, which is interesting because I saw that it's still being updated today. I'm like, oh, okay. So it still exists in one medium or another. And I mentioned that because there is a product that you're offering that has some similar functionality to that we're going to bring up. But with respects to these heads all coming together, so we have someone that's had a deep knowledge in being able to work in privacy, remote control, and things like that, and communications. And then you have Eric Prince, who funded this company and then brought you on board to manage it. It was thoughtfully, you guys thought about it, you developed it. This wasn't something that just like, you know what, let's just buy what is available. This has been in the works for, you've been 2 years there. This is your first product launch.
It'll be 2 years in June for me. And so, there was some ideas and some effort for the 8 or 9 months before I joined. This wasn't like, let's grab a bunch of phones and slap on a thing. And like, no, we've been at it for a bit. I've got a background in the defense and science and technology world. I started a company a bit ago, ran that for 12 years, sold it in 2020, took about a year off, year and a half off. And then, you know, when I sort of peeked my head back up and said, hey, I'm interested in a new project, that's when Eric reached out to me. This is not just like we're going to throw a couple things together. There's been some very robust work done. There's been, it feels like the startup, right? I come from the startup community, and,
And that's exactly what it is. And you're entering a very difficult 100%. Competitive space.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. There are times when we're like, ooh, payroll, tomorrow. Right. We're still doing some of that. Like it's not that dire anymore. We've gotten some great investors to form around us. And again, the fact that we've got 10,000 phones showing up in the United States next week is pretty dang exciting.
Yeah, and it's and I don't want to call James O'Keefe an influencer because he's not, but he does have influence. He's influential, but he was one of the first that I heard mention that. Then I started hearing others pick it up, but only because I missed that episode with Sean Ryan. I wasn't in tune to Sean Ryan's show as much until an acquaintance of mine, Sarah Adams, one of those that co-authored a book called Know Thy Enemy, Benghazi, Know Thy Enemy. So she co-authored it with one of the survivors from that day and one of the heroes, Dave Boone Benton. And so when I heard that she was going to be on, it's like, hey, when you speak, I listen. So I'll tune in. So I didn't know that he had already spoken with Eric Prince and talked about this phone some months back. So when I first did my reaction video that Eric Prince watched, thank you, Eric. And if you're watching, thank you very much for this opportunity to sit down with Ryan. And you got us connected. But with that being said, it did speak to some things that addressed concerns that I had. Because how does it pronounce? How? Because there's an OS that you guys built off of.
Libertas.
Okay, yeah, because that was a debate that people were having, but we can't.
Libertas OS. Yeah, Libertas.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, dude, I can't hear your accent on a comment. You know, it's like we have to do audio. So Libertas. Okay, so Libertas. There we go. That's what it's called, and it's based on Android and
it is AOS, AOSD, AOSP, and then we locked it down around there. And you know, look, you know, we everybody's like, I could just go grab a phone and download Graphene and do all of this stuff and like it'd be the exact same. And here's what I'm going to say to your listeners. You're right. But can the average consumer do that? Everybody's like, everybody can do that. And look, I started to learn about privacy from, look, I've been in the game for a long time. Mm-hmm. Some of my best friends are from the San Francisco Bay, Silicon Valley, much more left of my political leaning. And they were the first folks to start talking to me deeply about privacy and privacy and computation. And privacy and computation as it aligns to the Patriot, to the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
And that was decade and a half ago, two decades ago, right? That's been a bit.
Yeah, it has.
Right? And so like, part of me, as I've joined this, you know, sort of this community and this team, is I don't understand why the pendulum is, and like, this is a right thing. It's because it's not. It's right. So yes, Eric Prince is a very specific personality. I count him as one of the best business partners I've ever had in terms of somebody that can listen, lead, get out of the way, provide the resources, and trust others. But he's not the first guy that I've talked to that's talked about privacy and how do you deal with privacy and how do you protect privacy. But he's, you know, you talked about Tucker having his signal hacked. You've talked about James O'Keefe having his phone stolen right out of his hand. Eric, as a guy who has been brought before courts in the United States for things that were said and done or whatever, you know, so all of a sudden there's this side of the thing. But, you know, I'm telling you, 15 years ago, it was when George Bush was the president, it was the other side of the equation saying, hey, we've got to protect privacy. And I, for me, I don't understand why privacy has become a political hot button. Like, I feel like as I watch the discussions and the things that are going on in our nation that everybody's interested, you know, whether you were somebody look like me, I lived three blocks from the Capitol and I did walk up there that day and was like, oh no, this is a little bit too sparky for me. And I walked out. Or if you're somebody who is investigating what could happen for you when you have an unwanted pregnancy, you want to be able to go to a place and talk to a doctor and talk to a clinic. And it's like, none of those things should be then available to everybody because the federal government says so. It's a fundamental First and Fourth Amendment conflict of like the things that are happening right now. And yeah, I I do know why my friend Eric gets a lot of grief from a lot of folks, and I'll stand behind him every day. But like privacy, it's totally cemented in why our nation started. And I don't understand why in all of the different topics, it has now become like everybody should give everything up about them to all of these people for all of these reasons.
Yeah. And if I could put a time on it, I could see some of the erosion happening, and then the dam completely broke in 2020. That to me was the turning point for a lot of people with respects to what it became. Was like, well, hold on, do I not have autonomy over myself and my being? All of a sudden, we're being told that the government cannot force me to get an experimental shot that I don't technically need by all metrics. But through societal pressure, through the pressuring, in this case, for anybody that got PPP, OSHA was going to be weaponized to enforce whatever it is they wanted. It doesn't matter the scale of your business. These federal requirements, kind of like when the bailout happened. I was against the bailouts when it happened under Bush and then Obama for the banks during the housing meltdown because I knew it was going to happen. We're going to talk about centralized banking now all the way. Just like it happened with the automobile bailouts. GM, once they were able to, wanted to buy themselves out of the government, and the government's like, no, we're here to stay. So those kind of things were always a concern, and now they're going to be able to mandate that by forcing or leveraging companies to make their employees get the experimental shot. I, as a small business owner and operator, told my employees, it's entirely your choice. If you choose not to get it, you can still work in my company. And I gave them that choice, and basically all of them got it, but none of them afforded the same respect to me. I was being accused that I was putting their lives at risk. It's like, well, if yours worked, why do you care? I'm the one in danger. But that's not the way they saw it. This whole engineering and controlling of people, it became from a top-down thing, and it just shocked me. Because now we had to have the contact tracing, which is something that happened before COVID. But contact tracing was a thing that people wanted to have more concerns. They're like, well, how do I know that person doesn't have the shot? I need to know if they have it or not. And it's like, but if you believed what Fauci was saying, it was going to cure everything. So what does it matter? But it didn't stick. And some people 4 years later haven't even gotten out of that. I'm in Orange County, California. Outside of what's more left wing, which is Los Angeles. But I still see people masked up, sometimes wearing gloves too, and wearing face shields in the car. I'm like, dude, we're right outside Knott's Berry Farm. You're by yourself. This was just like 2 months ago. We're not talking 4 years ago at the height of the COVID scare. But a lot more did come after that. And then even more control into, I believe that was a reference to January 6th there. A lot more concerns did happen there because of geofencing. And this is a lot of stuff that people that are totally unawares. We can talk about metadata and tracking and geofencing when it comes to January 6th. We can't talk about it when it comes to ballot stuffing in certain states. Another topic that can open up a can of worms. But all this stuff is true things that you can't do.
We can totally talk about geofencing.
Absolutely. But what I mean is that this can go any which way. And the whole thing, it all comes down to tech, privacy, and how much control is leveraged to us by this. And just to put a fine point on it, as someone who's Christian conservative in that order, by the way, one of the big things has always been that you got to watch out for that, the mark of the devil. That's always been a concern in the religious community for those that believe. And a lot of those in the community were concerned about the shot being that the case. And I said, look, you're not going to look for the most obvious thing. I did not, and to this day, disagree with that take. This is, look, whoever took it got the mark of the beast. No, you know how you got it? As soon as you pick one of these up.
I guess I'd like us to like it, and you know, out of sort of biblical mark of the beast references and the story that I told. Look, I also lean way more conservative, and Eric actually hired me to be the liberals in the company. and we laugh about that a lot, but it is like all the things you described, which are things in the last 5 years, have absolute couplings back 10, 15 years before, when there was a different political party. And so that's really the thing that I'd like to talk to your audience about is, like, it really doesn't matter which side of the political spectrum you sit on. At some point, somebody's going to be in charge, and they may not be aligned with the way you think.
Exactly.
Do you want the ability, with the current laws that are about to be signed by the president, which is the expansion of the FISA Act, do you want to give that over to whoever is the ruling class in the country at the time? And again, I've got people that I love in my life that are feel very differently, but they're going to have a really hard time when people start looking at abortion clinics, universities, homeless events, things like that, and like people being able to model who's there. Who was there? Who was there? Where did they go back to? And that's the thing for, like, this, the geofencing and the tracking. And again, you know, for most of this, none of this is warranted. None of this is law enforcement said, like, hey, we've got a suspicion about this person for this thing. This is data that you can buy on an open exchange. If you say you want to sell socks, you can buy from a data exchange highly precise data about phones all over the world. And everybody will say, like, oh, well, that's anonymized. Now, Andres, you and I aren't together right now. I can imagine our paths crossing. And if we ever end up in a place together, and then I know somewhere else you've been and somewhere else I've been, I can de-anonymize which of those anonymous IDs are yours and which one's mine. And then I can follow you for the last 6 years, and I can follow you from here forward and know where you and your wife go to dinner, where your kids go to school, where grandma and grandpa live. And if anybody wants to push back on me on that, they can come sit with me and see some things that I know deeply and can drive specifically to places in the planet where I was able to see this when I was looking for what we would consider in the United States bad folks.
And I'm so glad you brought that up. You said you can buy it on the market. And yes,
$1,000 $1,000 I can own you.
And isn't that what Dinesh D'Souza and team did for the 2,000 mules for anybody that's seen it? Isn't that what they did to be able to, they had to specifically go for a certain subset so they can create a documentary. This is just recent stuff, but as you mentioned, it has been a while. Yeah. I've been opposed to the Patriot Act.
You're right. Dinesh D'Souza's in the 2,000 mules. It's exactly there. I've also been talking with folks at the ACLU in Massachusetts. Like, they've got a whole, like, they're like, hey, no, nobody's allowed to sell data inside of Massachusetts anymore. And I was really excited to be connected with this group. I'm a conservative. I got connected with the ACLU in Massachusetts. Like, what a dichotomy is that?
Right.
And like, they're like, no, we want Google. Like, we're going to put a law in place in Massachusetts that Google cannot sell our data to any other third party. Yes, it still gets used for Google Maps and all those things, and you can talk about all that stuff, but this is the ACLU, who's very concerned about the Fourth Amendment. They're very concerned about the Fourth Amendment. And I think that's the biggest thing about the expanded FISA. And as you said, we put the mark of the beast, or we've decided to put a nation state level surveillance device in our pocket with this thing.
Exactly. It wouldn't be the most obvious thing. When people think of Satan or Lucifer, they think of this ugly beast. And no, he's an angel of light. He's beautiful. So they're going to trick you into getting it. And the thing is, oh, it's the smartphone then. Let me get rid of my smartphone. No, if it has GPS, they found a way. There's a TED Talk, and I put this up because people needed to know. After 2,000 mules, that became a big debate about metadata. And I'm like, okay, there's this guy that had a lips, and I believe he was doing a TED Talk in London or somewhere in Europe. The point was, it was European country, where he was doing a tech talk presenting when he was leaving this mobile carrier for a different mobile carrier, and he asked for his data, and he had specifically asked for his metadata. This is before iPhone was really a thing. It was maybe 2 years into the iPhone introduction. So this is before Facebook and all that had their grubby hands into our tech. So he presented the metadata and spelled out every location he has been in, what bus station he was at, or tube station, as he called it, who he was messaging, where he was traveling to and from. And he was just showing us all there. And he says, these companies keep your data, depending on who they are, where they are, anywhere from 6 months to 2 years. And that was just with the dumb phones. Now it's even crazier. To the point where all this, I meant to talk about initially the phone, but we're kind of entering the whole why the phone exists.
Yeah, let's close with the phone. Because
we'll close with the phone.
This is the thesis, right? This is the thesis. Like, this is why it's important.
Yes, exactly. When people are concerned about government tracking, I've been opposed to the Patriot Act since it was first introduced. Regardless of the fact that I voted for the president, I was against the Patriot Act because I knew it was like, yeah, you're here now, but if I give more power to the government's never been one to give it away, or to give it up. And that was always a concern. And it's interesting because you said, well, that wasn't the left issue to the right issue. I've been talking about the left and the right are the same for the past few years because it's gotten insane. It's like, weren't you guys the ones that were occupying Wall Street over there? And then you guys on the right saying that they were idiots or whatever. And now it's kind of like flipped where these guys are now defending the big tech or the big pharma and all that. And then the right saying no. And they're talking about we need to free weed or whatever. It's like, dude, hold on. Where are we now? It feels like Bizarro World. For those that know, that's a comic book reference. But the thing is, when it comes to tech, we're always concerned about government. Well, technically, it's corporations that build the technology that often then sell it to the government. We give more credit to the government in being behind a lot of these things. But last I checked, yeah, we could talk about DARPA if we really want to. But the big thing is Facebook, Google. Well, now it's Meta because, you know, everything's confused. And it's not really Google. It's Alphabet. These idiots. So let's just keep it simple. Facebook, when I refer to Facebook, I'm referring to Instagram, which they bought. I'm referring to WhatsApp, which they bought. And I was part of the WhatsApp team beta test way back when we were doing it for BlackBerry. So I come from way back then and BlackBerry getting pissed. They're like, you guys can't steal our stuff. But hey, WhatsApp survived. And they talk about end-to-end encryption. When the whole Pegasus thing happened, and this is kind of all touches in, the whole WhatsApp or Meta in this case, getting pissed off at Pegasus because, hey, you guys cracked into our end-to-end encryption. Well, guess what, folks? There is no such thing as end-to-end, even Signal, even Telegram, maybe more Telegram than Signal, but there really isn't a protection that you can't hide your grubby, you can't keep these grubby hands off that data. Someone will still be able to siphon things off that because at the end, there's always a back door. And that's what's concerning. And this is not government. These are companies that build these things. And what was it? The antivirus industry or the virus and antivirus industry came about because disgruntled employees working at Microsoft or whatever. These guys all are interdependent. And I was like, okay, just keep doing what you're doing and we'll do the patches. You keep staying in business. It's all interconnected because we ourselves are the commodity. We, whatever we do, is that concern. It's just that when it comes to the government, I don't want them spying on me. I mean, I'm not doing anything bad, but I don't want them to spy on me. But every day it's like, hold on, you're geotagging where you are, who you're with, what you're eating, and uploading it for the whole world to see. It isn't a far stretch to know where you are. And even though it's free, you mentioned about us possibly crossing paths. There's this really scary case that people need to know about. Eric Prince shared that story of him getting into an argument with his wife, which is true, by the way, folks, when you leave the microphone on, there is a kill switch. Unless it's a physical one, it matters not. But there's this woman who went on a date to a bar in San Diego. I don't remember how many years ago this was. She went to, she went to the bar. She wanted to go on a date, whatever. She couldn't get one. She went over there. And there was this guy that crossed her path. That was it. She went home and Facebook was recommending her to add this individual as a friend that was present at that bar. I'm like, he had nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
It's like they just happened to be present there. But Facebook knew. And because that other person was on Facebook, then they knew. Facebook, how many years ago did they upload the facial scanning? Even if you're not on Facebook, if you have friends that are uploading to Facebook, Facebook has already scanned your face. They already know.
Man, if you turn on an IR camera detector while you're looking at your phone, while you're laying in bed in pitch black night, you will see these flashes.
Oh my goodness!
It's the phone taking a picture of you in all angles. Look, you know, the similar thing you talked about. You know, grief therapists, cognitive behavioral therapists, right? Like, people show up at their offices with phones, and then, like, all of a sudden, like, you might be friends, Joe, you might be friends with Jane because you guys went to the same therapist. Like that's the kind of thing that's being presented to you. You're like, wait a second, I know Jane. Why would I know? But because we've got a mutual connection with this person who's a freaking marriage therapist in town. So everybody's always like, I don't have anything to hide. I'm like, you don't have anything to hide? Do you draw your shades at night? Do you put a towel around your body after you get out of the shower? Do you lock your door?
Exactly.
Right? So, like, it's not like, I don't care if the government's looking at me because I'm not a criminal. It's like, do you really want them and the companies involved in this, right? And this weird trinity of the technology companies and the government and media. And again, everybody's gonna be like, oh, you're a right-wing conspiracy theorist. I'm like, I am not. Mm-hmm. Like, it could totally go the other direction. It could absolutely go the other direction. If the change, if you don't understand the precision of data about your life that is tied up in a device that you carry everywhere you go. Look, I've served in our United States military, and I've served in other parts of the government, and the kinds of access and placement that the devices give us is better than any technology the companies that work for the intelligence community could ever imagine creating. Mm-hmm. And we willingly carry it in our pocket every day with a microphone that's totally on all the time. Yep. And again, yeah, you could check out my LinkedIn profile. You'll see one of the things that I said, like, somebody finally said it out loud. A marketing company finally said out loud, yeah, we're listening to every conversation. We can provide that to you, advertiser, so that you can better target your folks. So, like, that creepy thing we all think is happening, we're like, wait a second, like, we said five words to each other in the car, and now all of a sudden, like, that's showing up in feeds? Yeah, it is, because they are absolutely listening.
Yes.
To your microphone.
Yeah, yeah. And what I consider one of the big offenders when it comes to that, because they never really offered a way to switch it off, like a physical switch, would be what Amazon has done with their Echo devices. They bought Ring, and they had almost zero safeguards for anybody tampering or accessing that information. So even the government had to step in and sue them and say, hey, okay, at least lock the back door to this stuff, man, because it's easily accessible. And that is a big concern that people don't know about. And furthermore, with respects to how much of this information is known about us and to the point where we are, people don't really know about Wi-Fi triangulation. There's oftentimes things, oh, they're tracking me through GPS. Yeah, but Wi-Fi, now you just increase the accuracy of where you are. But for anybody using an iProduct, let's talk about iPhone. I'm talking about, it could be maybe not so much an iPad, but definitely an iPhone. First, I appreciate any unibody design. Oh, it's a really nice, it's really nice looks. Thank you, HTC, for bringing that to us and sealing the battery inside where we can't replace it because it makes for a good design. Problem is, we can't remove the battery. Without removing the battery, we cannot kill the power to the device. You can never turn off your iPhone. You can never truly turn off your Android. Although, if you do know anything about either de-Googling or really rooting your device, you can technically get to it if you have that skill.
Oh, we can.
In the case of an iPhone, though, where you're never actually the owner of the phone because you're leasing it from Apple, they're giving you license to use it. That's why they always throttle your device with every update. They always patch this and that. They make it as difficult as possible for you to jailbreak. So what the EU is doing to go to war against Apple for their walled garden, that's pretty interesting. But anyway, that's a different story. With respects to what Apple has been able to accomplish with what is called the mesh network. There was CSAM scanning. I think it sounds right. Where the very controversial scanning of what Apple is doing, because it's saying you're storing it on our servers. So they're scanning your messages, they're scanning your photos, whatever documents and anything you're uploading to iCloud, Apple is scanning them actively on your device. Now, they were supposedly doing it for child exploitation stuff, but they say they didn't enforce it. They're doing it.
If I can.
Yes.
I'm going to encourage anybody that's listening to this, if you're on an iPhone, on your iPhone, open up iPhoto, and just type your name. Type your name, and you will see the kinds of things that you've taken pictures of. It might be your kitchen counter with mail sprawled all over the counter. So the first time I realized this was I was looking for a receipt for a flight that I took out of Washington Dulles. And I realized when I take a screen capture of a document, there's some OCR that happens.
Yeah.
And so I just typed in IAD, International Airport of Dulles. And like one of the pictures that came up was a picture of my office, like of a wide picture of my office. And my office was cool. It was in a historic home. There were furniture. And I'm like, why on earth did this show up as IAD? And an Apple will tell you where it comes from. There's a nice little yellow highlight. And like down in this bottom corner of a whiteboard in my freaking chicken scratch was like IAD to DFW 27.
Wow. Wow.
And Apple will tell you like, hey, we're only doing that on your phone.
Uh-huh.
I sort of believe the engineers that I talked to because I dove into it, but I'm like, but it's still a database on my phone. And so then again, and then, you know, I started going back through it and I started like using, you know, my name, my kids' names, others, and looking for stuff. I'm like, oh my gosh, the stuff that's indexed on my phone that is just like just general pictures I'm taking. You know, my daughter, when she got her military ID, and it was like this thing, and like it's across the room. Here's my ID. And like it found it.
Wow.
Right. And so if we think there's, there are some real conveniences in what this happens, right? Like yes. It allows me to go and be like, where was that receipt from that taxi I took? Like that is convenient. I love being able to show up anywhere in the world and, you know, throw into a mapping application. Like I need to go to this place. I don't need an address. I don't need turn by turn directions like that. So there is convenience in that. But it feels like we've given up the convenience of that to just be like everybody can have access to it. And that's what frightens me, Andres, about the expanded FISA.
Yes.
Like it's like every person who and every corporation who controls any communication device can be compelled to give that information up. That's terrifying. You know, and that's some of the guts behind what we tried to do here is like how do we rip as much of that out? And look, you know, it becomes less convenient to be hyper private. It does. It becomes less convenient. And so we are spending all of our time trying to get as hyper focused on how do we get as private as we can and still be as convenient as possible. But it's a multifaceted thing. Security, privacy, all of that is like there's no one thing you're ever going to be able to buy that's going to be like, now I'm private, right? So there's behaviors you've got to do. There's convenience you've got to give up. But I listened to your first review of us and you're like, I know I could do this with this, that, and the other. And I know plenty of folks that are in the privacy and security place that can do that. I also know hundreds and hundreds of parents who have teenage kids who have no idea how to do that and have no idea how to tell their teenage kids
exactly
how to do that. And think about the stuff we're seeing right now with teenage kids getting sexually exploited on the internet and taking their own lives because they're terrified that their grandmother's going to see that they shared an intimate picture with somebody on the internet.
Yes.
And so, like, I hear and we see it and I read it all the time, my friend. I hear it all the time. Like, I just can get, like, a Google Pixel and load Graphene and do this and do that and turn this off and shake my head and I'm private. And I'm like, man, most of the people in the United States, I mean, here's the thing that it actually surprised my engineering team. My engineering team's based out of Israel. I'm like, people in the United States don't know how to load a SIM card. They don't know what a SIM card is.
We have to put warning labels. Do not drink Drano, please.
Do not blow dry your hair while you're in the bathtub. And like, literally, people in the United States are like, what do you mean? I've got to get a SIM card for a phone. Like, I just go to the store and I hand them my old phone and they hand me a new phone and it works. And so this idea of understanding those things and understanding those concepts, like, it's going to take it. It's going to take that level of effort.
Evan, when we address the phone, I want to take that point to the next level, because it is for why this phone exists. And yeah. I have to give credit to that. But I have to touch on this, though, because this is something that just happened about a week ago on the Google side. But I first need to explain Apple's mesh network, because people know about iPhones and, okay, how much it can really track of us. But how many people know how AirTags work? There's the Tile company. Then there's Samsung doing their own things. But if people really work, they heard in the news that, hey, this guy followed me home. Why? Because when they exchanged Ubers or taxis or whatever, he dropped an AirTag into that person's pocket or whatever to track them home. And that's how they were able to break into their house. How was that even possible, though? How was an AirTag able to do that if that person that was tracked, that wasn't her AirTag? Because you don't have to be the owner of the AirTag. Apple has been able to expand, and they use what is called Bluetooth Low Energy, or Bluetooth LE, for anybody that's seen that. Like, well, I see Bluetooth and Bluetooth LE. Are they two different things? Technically, yes, because that's why your phone is always on. It's working through Bluetooth Low Energy because it's just barely sipping the battery, folks. And this is how they're able to expand their network. It has a wider range than normal Bluetooth. How? I don't know, but it does. And it communicates to other AirTags, and it connects to other iPhones. It doesn't have to be in someone that you know. It's all part of the Apple's network, and that's how they're able to triangulate where your item is through Find My iPhone, Find My Product. Yes. So that's what Apple does. And for those of you on Android, if you think you are safe, download the app to find out if Apple's using your Android to be a part of the Apple Mesh Network too. You are a part of it. Google just turned on their mesh network just over a week ago. It's almost like an innocuous blog post. They just turned it on for their Pixel 8 devices. Not the previous generations, but Pixel 8. So as Rob Braxman actually touched upon this too on his live stream last Thursday as I'm recording this. So anybody that's interested, go watch his stuff on this. He's the privacy guy for a reason. And with respects to what Google is trying to replicate that Apple is doing, in the case of Google, it looks like it's only at a software level, not at a hardware level. But lest we forget, Google has been building their own silicon to run their AI locally, which means they're constantly scanning something at the hardware level. We just don't know enough to know yet, but let's just assume that they're doing it, okay? So even if you de-Google the device, you're not de-Googling the hardware. Just FYI, this is why what people don't know about the extent of tech tracking. And there was a time, I don't know if it was 2009. I just know it was during the Obama administration. I should have looked this up before we went on this. There was a terrorist attack a few miles from here where a lot of the news covered it wrongly because it was a Planned Parenthood nearby. It was an Islamic terrorist attack, but it was being called a Christian terrorist attack against the Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood put on Twitter, says, We're okay. Nothing happened here. So immediately that was discarded. It was a couple that did an attack there. I forget for whatever reason.
Yes.
I remember. And the big controversy that happened after this was the iPhone that was recovered from the terrorist. And the government wanted access to that iPhone. And Apple refused to give them access. After 2020 or 2001, especially after January 6th, for some reason it's the other way around. Apple and big corporations are volunteering the information over to the government.
So they're still not at the device level, right? So you know they still own that, right? So that specific case, the San Bernardino couple, right? So it was it was a young 20-something, early 30s couple, husband and wife, and it was access to a specific device, but the same things about right, and that gets you into the guts of the phone, But their movements would have been up and available and others. And look, you know, you just went through several different things here. Convenience, security, law enforcement, all of those things. Right? So security or convenience. Like, the fact that my phone, if I'm an iPhone user, tools around and checks in with every other iPhone, every Apple device. And so like, if I lose it, and look, I'm a guy that loses my phone probably once a year, like totally hardcore loses my phone, you know, and I'm at that place where I'm like, oh, I'm just going to wipe it. I'm going to send the wipe code and I'm going to buy a new phone. I'm not that secure on my phone. But the fact that every Apple device, every Apple node, every AirTag, everything gets a thing and then collects that and then passes it on to the next device that can and sends it up and says like, oh yeah, device 5 was over here. Patterson was over here. It's terrifying. And then the fact that, and then they all claim like, oh, that's just for your convenience. We're not going to sell that. And then over and over and over and over again, we find out it's actually being used to deliver you advertisements. It is 100%. You know, when I started the company, I didn't start the company. When I joined the company, I came in and a friend of mine from San Francisco was driving me around. He's like, hey, Ryan, like before you like really dive in both feet to this, I just want you to see the billboards that are out here. And this is in San Francisco. And it was this billboard. iPhone, this is privacy, right? It was the phone in front of a face. iPhone, this is privacy. And we all got it at that time. We got the updates. We started being asked, do you want to share your information with this? Do you want to share your information with this? Do you want to turn off your mobile ad ID? Well, Apple just switched off the mobile ad ID and they switched that on to the Apple ID. And if you look at their SEC filings and look year over year, from the last 5 years to the next 5 years, what they're expecting in their SEC filings in terms of advertising revenue, your head will explode.
Yeah.
And again, Apple's still like this much compared to Google, which is this much. $300 billion in advertisements selling you as the product. You said it. Like, we are carrying devices in our pockets to allow them to sell us as the product over and over and over again.
Yeah, a lot of right wingers were posting pictures of the checkouts at Whole Foods or at Amazon Fresh, because all Amazon's like, pay with your palms. Like, oh, I would never do that. So let me pay with my phone. You just did it.
You just did the same thing.
Yeah, you're judging that thing, but you're pulling out your wallet pay. You know.
Oh, that's really good. That's well nuanced, sir.
So that's what it is to me.
Yeah.
Like we've really been talking about the negative a lot about tech, and that's if it's in dangerous hands and stuff. I will turn it around here in a bit, but it's all also the setup for the why, that is the unplugged phone, for those that know. Like, you and I are talking about this because we know. We've known. And before, you know, BlackBerry made a communicator more mainstream the way they did, they weren't the first ones to do it. Mobile devices, stylus input, that stuff existed way before a BlackBerry became mainstream. But I was telling my wife last night, I was like, honey, I want to watch Enemy of the State again with Will Smith and Gene Hackman. That was the movie that woke me up to, is like, holy smokes, the government's really spying on me. But that was 1998, Tony Scott film. Great film for those who need to watch it. Thrill ride all the way through. But it wasn't until 2002 with Steven Spielberg and Tom Cruise did Minority Report where I was scared of corporations, where even though it wasn't explicitly shown there, it was more along the lines of, well, your behaviors kind of assume your guilt, even though you haven't committed the crime yet. My issue was when Tom Cruise was trying to get away, because of course that's the driving narrative of the story, was they're all electric vehicles and he's speeding on the highway, speeding because he's not the one driving. But as soon as the government knows, lockdown, return the vehicle to base, and he's trying to break out of the vehicle. When I saw that in the theater, I got terrified. I was only like 17 at the time, and I thought, like, oh, that's how they're gonna get us. I love tech, and look, folks, tech is very convenient if you know how to use it. And That's pretty much how I got my YouTube channel started. I started talking about tech because I told people work smarter, not harder, especially talking to the small business community who didn't have the economies of scale to either hire somebody else, especially here in California where everything's so expensive. And that's why now more machines are replacing people at fast food restaurants. Thank you, Gavin Newsom, for that awful April Fool's prank. Burgers are super expensive now. I mean, you heard about Five Guys. I mean, Chick-fil-A is expensive again. So I was like, dude, this is insane. But anyway,
Chick-fil-A is allowed in California. I didn't think Chick-fil-A was allowed in California.
It was allowed after there were some protests. But yeah, they got vandalized though. They did. Still, with respect to technology, and I share people to people, like, dude, I carry multiple devices because technically I have to. That doesn't mean I encourage everybody to do it unless they can. You're talking about paying two different bills for two different phones. But I do carry two. I do carry an iOS product now. I mostly carry it because of my wearable. And I'll always carry a wearable. And this is the most location tracking you can get. But I know what I'm getting into. And I do what is called device isolation of information. I don't share both informations on both devices. But my main to-go business tool is in Android, and particularly Samsung, because they tailor to what I need. And they have a subset of tools for small business that I use on the daily. So I go for the flagships and I know what they're leeching off me because I am giving it to them too. So I'm well aware, but most people aren't. They just think, oh, no, it's a phone. It has the apps, therefore we'll get it done. And now with people being concerned about big tech and big government and these guys talking to each other and sharing our information, suddenly everybody's like, how come we don't have another mobile OS? Like, well, they did exist. They existed. There were Nokia with their Symbian, and there was Windows Mobile OS, and there was BlackBerry with their OSs. You said there were no apps. That's why you didn't buy them. That's why they gone by the wayside. BlackBerry wasn't wrong when their first foray into Android. They labeled it the PRIV, short for privilege and privacy. And it was because your privacy is a privilege. And those, you could not hack into those devices. You couldn't crack into their kernel to root them. So I'm like, wow, that's pretty solid stuff. But why are they not around anymore? It didn't have the hardware and later didn't really have the apps. So
for sure. I would not have taken this position that I'm in right now even 5 years ago, right? So I've been at it for 2 years. I wouldn't have taken 5 years ago. I think there is an undercurrent of opinion that folks want to regain some control over what is shared and who it's shared and how it's shared with, and make that easy to do. Look, I'm still a convenience guy. I love showing up in a place I've never been in the world and being able to make it to the place that I need to be an hour after landing. Mm-hmm. Right. That is wildly convenient. I think a lot of that is available. And again, you know, if it's free, you're the product. Are you willing to pay for a thing? You know, some of the pricing we did around our services and things get along that. Like, I don't know. Here's my streaming community. I've got Netflix. I've got Hulu. I've got Apple TV. I've got Prime Video. I think those are the ones that I have. I'll turn Peacock on every now and again because of a thing that I want to watch. $12.99. Are you willing to trade one of those to download then a suite of software that doesn't sell you as the product? Are you willing to do that? I don't know the answer. I think the answer is yes. I think a lot of people, as I run around the country, a lot of people are like, yes. And we're like, yeah, like, you know, we've got our phone priced at pretty competitive things. Like, it's less than $1,000. That comes with, for the first year, that comes with all of our privacy software. Next 2 years, you're paying that $12.99 a month. Are you willing to do that? Are you willing to think about that as a mechanism to regain some agency in yourself and your privacy and what is shared out there? And, you know, we're surely not done. All the things aren't finished. We don't have a complete Samsung replica of all the software. We do not have Apple libraries. But you know, one of the things for me that happened, and again, this is for me, this is not a play to like then up the revenue we produce because we're not scratching any markets. But like, I love Apple TV. I do love it. I love the content. I love their original content, and it was $6.99 a month for a long time. And they're like, hey, it's $9.99 a month. I'm like, yes.
Like, yes, yes, yes. Like, yes, I'll pay $3 more a month. I'll pay $36 a year because the content's good.
And did you do the $3 extra for Prime Video to just ignore the ads? Because they secretly...
Totally, yes, because I don't want the ads. Same thing, right? So, right, so, you know, is there a narrative in our nation right now where we'd be like, no, I'm actually willing to pay some money to not continue to be the product? We're not going to have time today. I don't think folks in the United States have any idea the precision of the data that their devices give up to anybody with a credit card. This is not like, oh, I don't care because I'm not doing anything illegal. This is like anything. I don't know if anybody on your show has ever had their privacy stolen or their identity through a bank account. Had a bank account freaking taken out from under them. That's frightening.
Yeah.
It happened to me. A bank that I was using, somebody had gotten a hold of the stuff. I used to have a clearance in the United States government. At some point in time, the Chinese broke in and stole all the OPM records, and people were using that. And they're like, you know, what's my background investigation record? Everywhere I've lived, name, address, phone number, two people I knew there, all of my family members, mom and dad. So like, think about anything you could need to use to voice verify into your bank. Give me three places you've lived. Give me your mom, your dad's maiden name, your dad's middle name, all of those things. And I watched $40,000 fly out of an account before noon one day. I got it all back. I got it all back.
Well, thank God.
But again, like if you think about the kinds of things in terms of stealing your privacy, like, yeah, tell me where the last five transactions you have, and you like can like buy the ad tracking and be like, well, they went to Home Depot. And they went to PetSmart, and they went to McDonald's, and a kids thing, right? So,
yeah,
this is not just like I'm not worried about the government because I never do anything wrong. You've never speeded. You've never gone over the speed limits.
Yeah,
you've never made an illegal U-turn. All available, and then who is the person deciding how that data can be used?
Exactly.
We have seen, and I hope you and I have agreed, hopefully your audience as well. Like this is not a partisan issue.
Correct.
That pendulum is going to shift every time we have an election, and whether it's going to be somebody be like, who didn't get a vaccination, but then went close to a school, or who went to an abortion facility to try to find services. And like, there are discussions about legal consequences for both of those things in our nation.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
For sure. And like, you just want the fact that you drove by to be a thing that can then become a probable cause subpoena. Because that's what they do, right? They use that location data to get they use warrantless collection of everywhere you've been.
Yeah.
To get a probable cause subpoena, to then dig in, to then like get your device and then get to your AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon accounts, to put a wiretap on your homes, Wi-Fi. But it's like, it's kind of like I'm telling you, I need three pieces of information about somewhere any one of your audience members have been, and I can find out where they live.
I'm glad that you're hammering home the issue, the point that it's not a partisan issue. And I can always turn it on anybody else's head, because right now, yes, you hear more on the left saying, oh, I don't do anything bad. It's like, okay, so what if Donald Trump had all those powers? Oh my gosh, I don't want him spying into my life. He's going to throw me in prison. It's like, well, see, like you said, the pendulum shifts. And that is why I want people to understand, you and I are not talking about freaking it. We're going to start some kind of cult and we're going to be, you know, some rich somewhere, you know, in some compound. That we're not talking about that. We're not even talking about like, we're going to be able to keep the government off our, their prying eyes off our stuff. We know they're going to find one way or another if they really want to. That's not our concern. It's like, dude, can you guys just stop making money off me already? It's that, that's not the government. That's the corporation stuff.
That's so. So that's corporations. But so for me, it's the combination of like, am I allowed to speak my mind publicly on publicly available channels? Mm-hmm. People will say, hey, Google, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter aren't publicly available. They're privately owned corporations. Okay. Okay. Is that what we're going to say? Okay. But then, you know, then we see things where when inconvenient discussions happen on those channels, we're seeing the government. We're seeing the government. And again, this doesn't like everybody's gonna be like, oh, you're a COVID denier. I'm not a COVID denier. I wrote my master's thesis on modeling man-made epidemics in 2001. So like COVID was like I wrote about this in 2001. So but and everybody just gets them, it gets so focused on like, oh, is this politically expedient or not? And I'm just telling everybody, at some point in time, who's in charge is going to change. Not in your favor. And I'm going to say favor with quotes. And just be careful about, which voices you are okay being shut out and which ones you're not. And then once I can shut a voice out and then I can know where that voice came from, then I can track somebody down and I can make their life hell and I can make them lose their jobs and their livelihood and their homes and I can put them in jail.
Yeah. So that's cancel culture right there in a nutshell. Yeah. It's awful. Yeah.
Wonders. I don't know if we'll get to the phone this time. I'm happy to come back again. Get to the phone. We've tried to build a platform that's both hardware and software that gives you some protections to bring those things back. Yeah. Andres talked about like, I can't turn it off. We can't take the battery out. We've got an embedded battery, but there's a physical switch on the side that separates the battery, right? So you flick that thing on, you don't need to put it in a Faraday bag or any of those things. I'll tell you the thing that I've gotten most excited about in the last 3 weeks, Andres, is our privacy center, right? So the long press on the left button brings up the privacy center and you turn on our mobile firewall. And so here's the thing. Another thing people don't realize is that there's the privacy center. He just brought it up.
Yep.
And he goes to the firewall, ad trackers, turn that ad trackers and the trackers in general. Because here's the thing most people don't know. Download an application. Your application comes with that application. And you would expect, if I downloaded Spotify, that my phone and my listening preferences is going to be communicating back to Spotify to say, Patterson likes Kenny Chesney. He just went to the concert 2 nights ago here in Tampa. Kenny Chesney, Zach Brown, he likes those things. And you would want, I want Spotify to serve up more of that. Mm-hmm. But what you don't know is Spotify comes with 7 or 8 other trackers that do all other kinds of data collection. Some of it's crash data, right? So like the application crashed. Well, why did it crash? You might be okay sending that back up, but do you have any idea what it's actually sending back up when your phone crashes? Do you have any idea? The IP address that you were on, the MAC address of your device, the screen resolution of your device, all of those things that can get really close to saying, this is Ryan Patterson's device. And then embedded in there are all kinds of application trackers. And so we pull that off and we're looking forward to, and this, if I can, I'll come back on when we've got the data there. We essentially loaded 25 applications on a Samsung device, 25 applications on an Apple device, and the same 25 applications on our device. We turned off all the ad trackers and those things. And we moved them around the same places. We wanted to see, we wanted to see where that phone sent data out to.
Ooh. Ooh.
Right. My CTO was like, I don't know what this is. We've got a lot of connections, but I can tell you what every one of those connections are and why they're there. But But these other phones, I've got no idea. We'll have a thing in about 30 days on that. So we're very excited.
You're welcome to share for sure. Yeah. You know, as we're wrapping up on time, I did want to get, because it's a bit of a follow up to something you brought up a little earlier. And so let me get some of these questions that were out of the way sure. with respect to what people had some concerns about. Sure. Well, proprietary apps, these are your things. And of course, software is a way to a more sustainable business model than it would be a hardware model. Sure. So when it comes to proprietary apps, it's a nominal fee, but it's free to try, I believe, as they get.
100% free to try. And look, you know, we're building some of the basic apps, the Messenger, VPN, others on open source constructs. But like, yeah, what we're charging for is if we're going to stand up a global VPN network, it costs money to run servers. It costs mm-hmm. money to move traffic around the internet. Yes. And so that's what we're doing. Yeah. And so, you know, Element's a key piece of our Messenger. That's an open source platform. People can go in there. We've actually stitched together three different VPN, OpenVPN, and I don't have the phone right in front of me. So three different VPN, open source VPN platforms or protocols that are in there. But yeah, yes, it costs money to have a VPN. Everybody's like, I could stand up a VPN on my own. I'm like, okay, if you want to stand up 35 nodes that then provide this to tens of thousands of people, that's okay. But it costs money. Our VPN tracks nothing. We don't have any search, none of it, right? And so, you know, everybody thinks like, oh, I can use Express or Nord or these or the other. I'm telling you, they're tracking your information. The key structure inside of our Messenger is solid. We don't have them. If you lose your keys, we're not going to help you recover. We can't help you recover. Not that we're not going to help you recover. We can't help you recover. So right. So like. Understanding the significance of protecting your keys and passphrases and things like that. Like there's no key recovery thing you can send back to us and we'd be like, oh, we'll decrypt all your messages for you now. Mm-hmm. Doesn't exist.
And I understand that, I think it was 2002 or might have been 2003, where there's like, you're testing the hackability of your products, so something like that, where you're testing the protection of it. And maybe I read it wrong, but you're also inviting others. It's kind of like through like phone.
Well, not 2002, 2003. That was well before we did this. So 2 years ago, 2 years ago. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. We've got a bounty program out there.
Okay.
It's available. So we've got five of our phones passing a crypto wallet unlock key. There's $25,000 in the crypto wallet. And so if you can pass it, the phones are in the United States, in Israel, South America, Europe. The Messenger's out there. You can get to the Messenger. You can understand it. You can hack into our Messenger servers. DDoS and things like that, just messing with it is not there. But there's $25,000 out for anybody. It's there that's been in that crypto wallet for 2 years. And so you can come get it and then you can just take it. But if you like reach back out to us and say like, here's how I got it, then we'll give you another $25,000. Some people will say that's not enough. Make it $1 million bounty. And okay.
It's money.
We've got that amount of revenue. I'm making $1 million bounty.
Yeah, no, but it's good to know. I wanted to get clarification on that. Yeah. So with respects to proprietary apps and bounties and having this device, and we talked about all this concern of privacy and control and all that, there have been some concerns though because of who it's not being marketed at the so-called Patriot community, but it does feel like it's being lent that way because of the voices that I've already talked about it, which is why I brought up some concerns about a honeypot.
Yep.
What do you say to that?
People should look into my background and the things that I've done. I have worked inside and outside of the government. I will tell you, my partner, Eric Prince, is one of the folks that's more focused on privacy because of the attacks that have happened on him. You're right. There's been programs by the FBI to create things, and then all of a sudden, they just turn out to be a big honeypot. I'll provide anybody a white glove evaluation of all of our code. We're in the process of getting ready to deploy and publish a ton of the open source that we've got out there. Mm-hmm. You know, as you may or may not know, as you're getting something up and going, immediately publishing it as you're working is tough, because then somebody's like, that single line's wrong, and you're like, you haven't had a chance to, like, you know, test it out in beta with your own team. So I'm not scared of open sourcing our stuff. I'm going to do it at the right time. People can get into the back, you know, if they want to get in the back door, the conspiracy theorists, look, man, I had a marketing call about an hour before I got on with you, Andres. And, you know, we just went back over through some of the Twitter comments about a video that Eric put out. And look, I mean, there's people like, he's a traitor. And I'm like, never met him. You've never read anything he's written. You've actually never seen any of his work. And to, like, call him a traitor and whatever. Can he be polarizing? Sure. Can anybody on any side be polarizing? Yes. You know, but can we agree on the fact that because we've decided to carry this does not give the United States government or any government access to our private lives, to include what was just talked about, you know, in my living room last night? Mm-hmm. Tough conversations, but just because we had phones around, does that literally give the tech companies and the government access to those things? I think the answer is no, and I'm happy to get on with anybody on any side of the political spectrum. And I was very honored to be able to be part of the ACLU stuff. And I was just on the conversation, asked a few questions, you know, happened to know some people there, and everybody's like, yes, no, we agree with you. We might not agree with the political opinions of everybody you hang out with, but. Mm-hmm. But do you agree that I should be able to have conversation around my dinner table, and whether I'm hiding something or not, have that not available to industry and government to mine and monitor and do keyword searching on?
Yeah. And I'd like to think that the answer is yes, that we agree on that.
I would like to think. Anyway.
There will always be naysayers, and here's where we'll leave it. There will always be naysayers. We'll never be able to address them or make them feel any better. But hopefully, you know, as things are going, that some of them will turn around and become believers. Because I got to tell you, it's not normally a reaction when calling out a company, especially a product that's just about to launch, to make this connection, offer up a device like you guys. Thank you very much. And for sharing my video with the team and stuff. So thank you, Eric Prince, for checking out my content there, because, well, it was not meant to be disparaging in any way. It was constructive criticism. And I wanted to make sure that the community that's I know will be among the first to go for this. It's like, hey, guys, at least make an informed decision, because among those over there, well, you can do it yourself. It's like, well, when you guys check out my review, I'll show you some of the de-Google devices and you'll make your decision then, I think. But I believe there is a place for this. I think it's coming at a right time. When I first saw the pictures, I'm like, that looks like a Samsung device married an iPhone. And when I got it on my hands, it's pretty much... is that, and for size comparisons, folks, this is the S24 Ultra, one of the biggest phones out there, and it's almost that size too, just a hair short and a tad bit not as wide. But the point is that it is a sizable device, and I have my initial thoughts that I'll be publishing before I dive into my objective review of this and tell you why this is not an iPhone, this is not a Samsung powered by Android Google thing, and people misunderstand. And I'll explain those in the other ones. We're out of time on this one.
Yeah.
Ryan from Unplugged, thank you so very much for making the time to be on the show. You're welcome anytime to talk about this stuff and share.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. I just a parting word to your audience. Audrey's asked some hard questions of us. They made their way back to Eric. We looked at them. We all went back and watched the video. And as a team, we're like, that was an honest brokered assessment of what we had publicly available. He didn't have a thing in his hands. And, you know, we took some changes on, well, it'll be after this air. So, you know, in 2 days, on Wednesday the 24th, we've got a whole new website coming out and some very direct feedback from Andres about like what we had shared publicly and what we had not, and what was seemed to be opaque has been rectified. And I appreciate you, man, as an honest broker and an honest evaluator of things. And I was glad to be able to spend the hour with you.
And that was my conversation with Ryan. So Ryan, thank you again for being on the program. Eric Prince, for watching, appreciating, and sharing my episode. I thank you very much. And for everybody else, remember to like, share, and subscribe to stay in the know, and you'll be in the know. Follow me across the socials at @TheAndresSegovia, _AndresSegovia over on Twitter. Make sure you hit the notification bell so you don't miss out when I drop my review of the Unplugged Phone. And I'll see you on the next one.